Our true crime podcast deals with sensitive issues, including some that little ears shouldn't hear. Listener discretion is advised.
This is Cam.
And I'm Jen.
And you're listening to
Our True Crime Podcast.
Hi, I'm Roseanne, host of the California Dreaming Podcast, a show that delves into the darker side of the not-so-golden state. Together, we will visit some of the most unhinged and chilling crimes that ever shook California and beyond. Join me as I take you on a journey into a new story each week with a different backdrop from all around California. From the bright lights and glamour of Hollywood to the picturesque and tranquil wine country, no crime, no town, nobody is off limits. Listen to California Dreaming on the Orbital Jigsaw Network or anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Hello, I'm the narrator, the creator of Mythical, a podcast that wanders into the dark and fantastical pages of fairy tales and myths. Each episode, I read a classic or obscure story and add my own thoughts on the narrative. If you love original fairy tales, visit the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Mythical Podcast for all the latest updates and links to listen for free. I hope to see you in the storybooks.
Is it going to be when we come on here and say, hey, Jen, hey, Cam, how are you? And then I say, terrible. And then I actually give you.
It'll never happen because nobody wants to hear about your bad days.
I'm just saying it could.
Yeah, you know, it could happen. But
so what's going on with you?
Not too much. The other day I was on Facebook and remember our friend Drew.
Drew. Hi, Drew.
We love Drew. She put the cutest little picture of her up.
We met her at CrimeCon the first year and then hooked back up with her the second year.
She is absolutely adorable. We love her. But anyway, she posted a picture of her. I think she was at the Journey concert.
Oh, I love Journey.
And she was trying on some
Don't stop
swag.
Believing.
Exactly. And posted the cutest little picture of her, and I made a comment, and she told us that she made her husband listen to us. Get that? Made her husband.
Yeah, in the car. I was going to say they're forced, yeah.
And he said that he actually thought we were funny.
Because we are. Oh, my God.
We are. So I said that I would add, he's a big Star Trek nerd, so live long and prosper.
Beam me up, Scotty.
That's about all I know about Star Trek.
Yeah, me too.
But I like...
They had the first interracial kiss. Did you know that?
I did know that.
Yep.
I did then.
A little tidbit. For you?
I think, isn't Patrick Stewart coming back? I think I heard that. I heard a rumor that he's coming. I don't know if he's going
to
be.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if he's coming back as Jean-Luc Picard, but I think I read a rumor.
I heard a rumor.
That, yeah, anyway, if I'm wrong, let me know.
Yay, Drew's husband. Thank
Yay,
you.
Yay, Drew's husband. Yay, Drew.
See, every road trip, you can force him to listen to
right.
us.
It's hey, and one more thing. If our friend Amanda... is
Hi,
listening
Amanda
and her
and
husband
Jamie.
Please let us know if you've had that baby.
We need to know.
There are other true crime people. We met those two
at CrimeCon
in the first year.
First year.
And then, back again on the 17th.
And she showed up the second year with baby in tow.
I know.
In belly.
Yeah. So anyway, another thing, if you aren't registered to go to CrimeCon, sign up or don't, because the less people.
It's easier than you get into, you know.
Yeah. But no, it's. Absolutely fun. And we've made so many good friends.
It's because Jennifer
Aaron too.
Will talk to a wall if she thinks that it will talk back. Yes, Aaron. Hi, Aaron.
No, see, I love to make new friends.
I know you do.
Everybody makes fun of me, but I love making friends.
It's annoying.
So email me at...
imaloser@gmail.com.
So send me a shout out on Twitter at @TrueCrimePod. Anyway, right. I'd love to talk. Seriously.
She really does. It's annoying. Whatever.
You love me. Anyway, what do you have for us today?
Oh, I have a doozy
What
case.
You got?
Doozy O case.
Oh, really? Good.
Yep. All right. Sit back.
Give it to me.
I'm going to. I'm glad.
All right.
So losing a child has to be one of the hardest things a parent could ever live through, right, Jen?
Oh my goodness, I don't even want to think about it.
I don't either. Well, what about losing all of your children?
No.
What if your children were murdered and the police show up to arrest you?
No.
Yes.
It wouldn't be pretty.
So this is a story about lies and untruths, about hidden depositions and lost documents. It's a story about our flawed system that failed a family and a community. This is the story of James Joseph Richardson.
Ooh, I haven't heard this.
Cue the music. Didn't you like that intro? That was very, like, I tried to read it, like, with the oomph. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was very Dateline.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I could almost hear.
Mank.
Or Keith leaning against a wall, reporting it. That's awesome. We love you, Josh.
You are unbelievable. Okay.
Call me Collect.
It was 1967, and James Joseph Richardson was a 33-year-old African-American man living in Florida with his wife, Annie Mae, and their 7 young children.
7?
The couple made a living, a hard living at that, as migrant workers. Mm. This was the late 1960s in Arcadia, Florida, a small town not unlike other typical small towns of the time from the South. We all know that there's those things that happened that went on during that time period, terrible, hideous things. A small town kind of had their own laws.
Right.
You know.
Sundown.
So this October morning, the Richardsons did what they always did. James and Annie Mae would get up early to get on a bus and travel out to the fields where they would pick the crop that was in season, such as oranges, grapefruits, tangerines,
right.
Mm-hmm. Etc. Before departing, they woke all 7 of their children to get up and eat and get ready to go to school for those that were old enough to go to school. Now, 2 of the 7 children were Annie Mae's from a previous relationship.
Wow.
The children were Betty, age 8. Alice, age 7. Those were Annie Mae's from previous marriage. Susie, age 6. Doreen, age 5. Vanessa, age 4. Diane, age 3. And little James Jr., age 2.
They had 6 girls.
Bam, 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 bam. Right?
I have 2 girls. I could not imagine having 6 uh-huh. girls. That poor little boy, though, I bet you he got tons of love.
The night before, Annie Mae had prepared a lunch for the children, and it consisted of rice and beans. For breakfast, she had made grits for the children.
Yum. Love grits.
Now, the meal was placed in the refrigerator overnight. Since the Richardsons left very early to go to the fields, often a neighbor lady named Bessie Reese, who lived right next door, would take care of them. She'd come over, get the little ones fed, get them dressed, get them off to school. Bessie's own grown children lived right there as well. Often, Bessie would feed her own grandchildren at the same time as she fed the Richardson children.
Aww.
On this chilly October day, she only fed the Richardson children. What's that called, Jen?
Foreshadowing.
All 7 children took their places at the table. The oldest 4 Richardsons were enrolled in school, and after filling their little bellies with the warm grits, they sat off and walked to school, while the younger ones remained behind. Now, at lunchtime, the children would walk back home to eat their lunch.
Wow.
On this day, as I stated, beans and rice was what was on the menu. And Bessie Mae had warmed it all up and had it ready to go for them. All 7 children ate at lunchtime, and the 4 school children returned to school. The 4 Richardson children were not present at school for very long when the teachers noticed that they had started acting strange. One had begun to foam at the mouth, and another was on the ground convulsing. Teachers immediately alerted the principal, who took the children to the local hospital.
Oh, my word.
Just wait. This is something else. The teachers knew that the Richardsons had younger children at home, so they took it upon themselves, and they darted over there to check on the little ones and make sure that they were okay.
Right. And they were with Bessie, though, right?
All the children were gravely ill.
Oh, gosh. Good for her for going home, or him, but mostly her.
Word was sent out to the fields to retrieve the Richardsons, who were then brought to the hospital. Now, this is so sad. At the time that they arrived at the hospital, nobody would tell them what was happening. Authorities took them inside the hospital and straight to the chapel. A minister was brought in.
So they were dead.
A minister was brought in, and the Richardsons were told to start praying, still unaware of the circumstances regarding their children.
Could you imagine? Wouldn't you be demanding?
When James demanded to know what was going on,
there you go.
The sheriff looked at the minister and he said, "I'm going to let you tell them." And the minister said, no, you're going to tell them. The sheriff looked at James Richardson in the face and said, "James, all your children are dead."
Oh, my God.
This is, can you believe it? Is this terrible or what?
I would faint.
The community came together and raised enough money to have funeral services for the family. 7 small white coffins lined the school's gymnasium floor.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
As a mourning town came to pay their respects. The story actually made national headlines. There were black and white photos of the grieving family. Both James Richardson and Annie Mae collapsed at the service.
Oh, my word.
Of course, right?
Oh, yeah.
The cause of death was still unknown, but the sheriff had his suspicions, and all that attention meant that he needed to make an arrest and quickly.
Of course.
So foaming from the mouth, as we know, was a sign of poisoning, and it was said that the house smelled very strongly of parathion. Now, parathion is an extremely poisonous insecticide. Remember the Richardsons work in the fields. Parathion was a commonly used insecticide back in the 1960s.
Before it was ruled too dangerous.
It has since been banned, as it is really pretty awful stuff. Just a small amount would make a person get viciously ill. Half a little teaspoon will kill you.
Right. And these are poor little teeny tiny kids.
Back then, you know, they don't use all the precautions that we do today. To control poison. So you imagine they'd probably use the stuff out in the fields without any mask or anything.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. I mean, hell, we didn't have seatbelts.
Sure did not. The authorities went to the Richardson's house and they tore it upside down looking for trace evidence of what could have killed those poor babies. They searched everywhere and could locate no sign of poison, but they did find something. Inside the house, they found a business card from an insurance company.
Never a good sign.
As the officer turned the card over, scribbled in handwriting were the words, quote, $500 upon the death of each child, end quote.
Oh, no.
Authorities now had what they needed.
It's not worth it.
It was proof to them that these deaths took place to collect insurance. Oh, and on the next day, after the house had been searched twice by Sheriff Frank Klein, a bag of parathion was located in a shed in the back. Not a small amount, mind you, a large bag. It was not found by the sheriff, but was found by Miss Bessie and the town drunk named Charlie.
Oh, huh.
So this was all the authorities.
It's getting interesting.
Needed. Yes, it is, isn't it? So 2 days after the funeral, Klein charged Mr. Richardson with 7 counts of murder in the first degree. However, Police Chief Bernard said, quote, there is just no case against that man. Now, Mr. Treadwell was in charge of prosecuting the case, and he also agreed with Bernard.
Well, besides the bag.
The bag. And the insurance card.
And the insurance card, there's really not a lot of evidence at all.
Treadwell name, you're going to need to kind of remember that.
Treadwell, okay.
The murder warrants were dropped, but both Richardsons were formally charged with child neglect. 3 months after the murders, the state still did not have a strong, solid case. But not to fear, they fixed that.
Now, wait, were they charged with neglect because they left the kids alone?
I would assume that it was that. And then they got into poison, right?
Right. That it was accidental.
Yeah.
Okay.
So after Richardson was let out on bail, the sheriff went into the jail and asked around about James and inquired if he had said anything. Mm-hmm. You know, a little, you scratch my back and I'll scratch out a better deal for you kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Lo and behold, a few prisoners came forward with some statements. Former assistant prosecutor John Treadwell, told you remember that name, granted an interview in which he had stated, quote, without those statements, those jailhouse confessions, we would have a weak case.
Wow. So
Richardson was then picked back up and put into jail as they prepared their case against him. Now we're going to introduce John S. Robinson, a 30-year-old white lawyer, became concerned over all the media coverage of these Arcadia murders. He believed the case was being handled unfairly, as the judge constantly claimed that Richardson was guilty. Now, the trial hasn't even happened yet. This is taking place.
Of course.
He contacted people who knew Richardson, and they told him he had a reputation as a family man, and they could not believe he would kill his children. Robinson then called the president of the NAACP in Florida, Joel Atkins, and convinced him that the NAACP chapter in Arcadia should ask Richardson whether he wanted to be represented by them and should give him a list of potential lawyers that would be able to do so.
Right.
Actually, Richardson chose Robinson. Robinson went to talk to Richardson while he was being held in the county jail before the trial took place. Richardson was adamant that he had not killed his children because he loved them very much.
Right.
Richardson said that, this is terrible. Richardson said that Sheriff Klein was pushing him around, calling him the N-word, and questioning him in a very mean way every day.
that
Klein
poor man.
Had told Richardson that he would be let off easy if he confessed to the crime, but he denied that he had ever harmed any of his children. So earlier I said that the sheriff, you know, they needed to find some dirt on Richardson.
Right.
So they went in and they talked
to They made offers
to these
that
people.
People couldn't
so
refuse.
Through Ernell Washington, who was a prisoner in there, the lawyer Robinson had discovered that Sheriff Klein had placed an eavesdropping device in Mr. Richardson's cell so that whenever Robinson, his lawyer,
right.
was going in there to talk to him, he would hear everything.
Ooh, that's
Robinson
dirty.
Later found the microphone and removed it, letting Sheriff Klein know that he had found it.
Oh, dirty you. Players. I do not like
dirty bird.
Players.
Dirty bird. So it was decided that Mr. Richardson should be charged with the first degree murder, which carries the death penalty. And a little side note here, one of these people in charge said that they're going to charge him with only one murder. And then that way, if they fail, they got six more to go down. So they were just going to start at the top, keep going. So they were after him, right?
Well, they do that, but they
yeah.
basically, yeah, they were after his blood.
But
they wanted
wait.
To get it done quickly, and mm-hmm. who's best to put it on the African-American father.
Yep. So the case went to trial. Steeple. Schwab was the prosecutor. Now, he was well known at this time for another big case, the Carl Capolino case. No, you've never heard of it, because neither have I. But when I get to this, she'll be like, oh, okay. In that case, Dr. Capolino was charged with killing his wife and their neighbor by injecting them succinylchloride.
Yeah, that.
Mm-hmm. So F. Lee Bailey had represented Dr. Sam Smith, the fugitive. Remember him?
Yes. Uh-huh. And I do know F. Lee Bailey.
Yes, yeah, I know you do. And had just gotten him an acquittal in a similar murder case, right? Bailey had successfully gotten the doctor off of the death of the neighbor.
Off.
He wasn't charged with the murder of the death of his neighbor. However, he was convicted of killing his wife. He was given parole after serving a 12-year stint in prison.
Wow, only 12 years?
12 years. Now, and you remember Sam Shepard,
right.
the fugitive, same thing. He
right.
was it supposedly killed his wife, right? And F. Lee Bailey.
Right.
Did get him.
They did a TV show about
it. They
him.
Sure did. The Fugitive. Mm-hmm. Which I saw a while ago. For Schwab, this was the next big case to once again make a name for himself. The trial began on Monday morning, May 27th, 1968, at the Lee County Courthouse. All of the jurors chosen were
white.
Despite numerous challenges, Robinson was unable to secure a fairer jury.
I believe it.
So Ernell Washington, the
right.
prisoner that we talked about earlier, James Weaver and James Cunningham, who had all been cellmates with Richardson in the Arcadia jail, took the stand and said that Richardson had admitted to them that he had killed all the children.
Liar, liar, pants are fire.
Judge Justice revoked the bail, ordered Richardson to be jailed again, and asked for a change in venue to Fort Myers in the next county. Attempts by Robinson to move the trial to a potentially fairer county were denied.
Of course it was. Mm-hmm. How frustrating.
It was crazy. So during the trial, Sheriff Klein claimed that there was evidence in at least three of the Richardson's children and that they had been killed in another county and a further three who had become ill but had not died. Uh-huh. Makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
Right? So the babysitter, Miss Bessie Reese, took the stand where she testified that she had divvied up the meal into seven equal parts once the children came home from school at 5 minutes to noon. No other questions about her involvement in the preparation of the food were asked. When asked about finding the sack of Arathion, Reese became more specific, claiming that Charlie Smith, the town drunk, remember him?
Yeah.
Wanted to look for the sack and went straight to the shed, pulling a board off the window and discovering the sack of poison.
Wow.
This, of course, implies that Charlie Smith had prior knowledge and knew about the location of the poison.
Exactly.
And, oh, I don't know, maybe put it there? Question mark.
Maybe. Wow.
It was an unknown woman that saw them retrieving the sack, and she called authorities. That's how that came about. Charlie Smith was in the courtroom, but was not asked at all to testify at that time.
Really?
And another little tidbit could be important. Oh, I'm just not sure. Treadwell, you know, the
right
dude we talked about earlier, was conducting the exam of Reese up on the stand, established that she was, in fact, on parole at this time.
Oh, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But he did not ask what charge she'd been convicted of.
Oh.
So up next is Gerald Purvis, the insurance salesman. Purvis claimed that he had visited the Richardsons on Tuesday, the 24th. So this was just the night prior.
Right.
Just the night prior to the murders. Purvis testified that he talked about family insurance plans with Mr. Richardson, but Richardson could not pay the necessary premiums. Purvis decided that he would come back in a week or so. In court, Treadwell insisted that Purvis left with the impression that policy was in place, but Purvis adamantly denied that.
Good for Purvis.
Up next, we have a pathologist and a chemist.
They walk into a bar.
Concluded that the children had in fact died from organic phosphate parathion, which was found in their stomachs
right.
and on utensils in the Richardson home. Several law enforcement officers, including Bernard, Klein, and Monahan, testified that they had searched the shed and had not seen the bag of poison there on October 25th.
In fact, the town drunk found it, but the police didn't.
That Sheriff Klein had admitted to searching that shed twice. Not
right.
once, but twice. Charlie Smith, his story agreed with Bessie Reese's, and he was quickly excused.
Of course he was.
Say what?
You're the judge. This is a trial. And it's like, okay, two cops searched this small shed and didn't find anything. But damn it, the town drunk knew
that
it was going to be in there.
Sniff it out.
He knew it was going to be in there. Oh. And I'll be damned, he wasn't even there 5 minutes before he found it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Funny how that works.
Wouldn't you just say, yeah, mistrial, let's...
Well, you'd think, but again, 1967, African-American man.
I know.
So the jury then retired to consider the evidence.
All-white jury?
Mm-hmm. The all-white jury went to consider the evidence. You ready?
I bet you I know the outcome.
A half an hour later.
A half hour.
Half an hour later.
30 minutes.
On May 31st, 1968, they returned with a unanimous verdict. Death with premeditation at the hands of James Joseph Richardson.
Ugh. Poor guy.
Jurors recommended the death penalty for him. James Richardson was sentenced to die by the court and was on death row for nearly 5 years.
And this is the main reason why I have problems with the death penalty.
He was saved by the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in 1972 that says that the death penalties in the U.S. at this time were unconstitutional. His sentence was commuted to life in prison with eligibility for parole in 1993. Now, here's another little thing. So just a little side note. So strangely enough, you know, the judge in the case had Charlie Smith, the drunk, arrested as a material witness and set bond for him at $2,000. So many clues had been overlooked or hidden, and I'm going to go with hidden, would have pointed to Richardson's innocence. Enter Mark Lane. He's an internationally known trial attorney and author. He had visited Richardson on death row. Richardson asked Lane to represent him. Lane began an exhaustive investigation and in 1970 published his findings in a book called Arcadia, in which he revealed that the babysitter, Miss Bessie, Bessie Reese, was a convicted murderer.
No way.
And indicated that Richardson and his wife were innocent.
Background
now, remember,
checks.
Treadwell, when he had Bessie Reese on the stand, he did have her say she was on parole. She
right.
was out of jail. She was on parole, but he never went into why.
Right.
That would have changed everything.
It would have exactly. Well, you hide that because that's not good for the case.
At the time of the children's murders, Reese was on parole for killing her ex-husband and had been suspected of poisoning another husband.
Oh.
She's a sweetheart. She's a keeper.
She is a keeper.
Definitely gets the
is
swipe
she single
on Tinder.
Now?
Well, would Probably. You marry her?
No, but
right.
She's not my type. I'm sorry. Why wouldn't his defense bring that up?
They didn't know. That was hidden. They didn't know.
Oh, okay.
Mark Lane is the one that discovered it here later. This author.
Gotcha.
Guy. Yeah. So the prosecution had worked hard to keep this fact from coming up in trial. Little had been done to pursue her involvement with the children's death at all, including the facts that she had given them the food and had initially lied, saying that she had never gone into the apartment, said she did not feed them, she wasn't there.
Well, here, okay, another thing. Why wouldn't the defense try to, I mean, the defense gets a list of all the witnesses. Why wouldn't they look into Bessie?
They hid stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, but how do they hide that?
I don't know.
How do they hide court records?
I wasn't there. I don't know.
You were there. You were 25.
So here's where we get something finally starts getting done for this poor man. Albeit it's 1988.
Oh.
Right? Enter this guy. I like this story. Enter this guy named Remus Griffin. Now, Griffin sort of grew up as a privileged kid. He's kind of in and out of jail a little bit for drug offenses and things like that. He never really had to have a real job. You know, his parents were wealthy. Okay. So he started dating the secretary of one of state attorney Frank Schwab's deputies. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
His girlfriend, the secretary, knew that there were these documents that were about to be destroyed. Ooh. And she knew that someone needed to see him. So with the little five-finger discount, the papers went to Griffin, who then turned them into Mr. Lane.
Hero.
Hero.
Secretary's a hero. Whoop, whoop,
whoop. So Lane then
I need a hero. I'm holding on for a hero to
you
the
need
end
a zero
of the night.
And you already got that. Okay. Lane then met with the governor's counsel and turned the entire file over to the governor, asking for a full investigation and a hearing on the Richardson case. Here's where we get some more names that are going to be familiar to you.
Good.
The governor, Robert Martinez, appointed the state attorney from the Miami-Dade County, Janet Reno.
No way.
To be the special prosecutor on the investigation. A number of months later, on October 25th, 1989, a hearing was held in Arcadia in the same courthouse where Richardson had been convicted more than 21 years earlier. Lane appeared on behalf of Richardson, and Reno appeared on behalf of the state of Florida.
Right.
Lane argued, and Reno agreed, that a grievous injustice had been done and the wrong man had been convicted of the crimes. Reno cited the withholding of Brady material from the defense, six separate exculpatory elements of evidence. There was evidence of a cover-up by Sheriff Frank Klein, state attorney Frank Schwab, and his deputy Treadwell, as well as the local judge.
Please tell me they were brought up on charges.
After looking at all of the evidence presented by both sides and noticing the inconsistencies and the injustice that had been done in Arcadia over two decades earlier, retired circuit judge Clifton Kelly said that Richardson had not received a fair trial. Gee, you think? And he was released into the custody of his attorneys, Lane and the local counsel. Finally, only after 21 years.
Poor Annie Mae. What was she up to the whole time?
Just wait. We get to hear from her in a minute.
Okay.
After his release, Richardson went to work for, this is pretty good, so it's a St. Louis person, you know, went to work for nutritionist Dick Gregory.
Oh, yeah.
He's from St. Louis. He's since passed.
Is that the St.
St. Louis guy. Yeah. Dick Gregory at a health resort in Fort Walton Beach. Gregory had previously spoken out for Richardson amid a groundswell of celebrities, including famed Miami attorney Ellis Rubin. So Richardson filed a lawsuit against the DeSoto County for his wrongful prosecution and settled for $150,000. Can you imagine 21 years of your life and all seven of your babies are gone?
No.
On August 25th, 2008, after his legal claims had been rejected based on the precedent of prosecutorial immunity, Richardson filed a claim under Florida's wrongful conviction compensation law, which provides compensation for wrongful imprisonment of $50,000 a year. Now, that sounds more like it. Richardson had meanwhile, now he's getting up there, you know, because he was 33 when he was convicted. Richardson had meanwhile suffered a series of setbacks after being released from jail. The job at the health resort ended. He suffered from severe heart problems, which he, I thought this was kind of funny, attributed to prison food, as well as poor medical care and stress that he had.
Right.
He ended up having open heart surgery in prison. And I'm sure they have good doctors, but I'm going to probably guess probably not.
Probably not by those times standards. Yeah.
He and his wife, who had remained loyal to him the time he was in jail, eventually divorced. The settlement by the county went to pay the cost of his local lawyers, while Richardson had been in prison for so long that he became eligible for Social Security.
Wow.
In August 1995, he had a heart attack at his home in Jacksonville, and he was flown with a longtime friend, media expert Steve Jaffe, to Wichita, Kansas, for emergency treatment by a cardiologist. The doctor performed an angioplasty, and after that, offered Richardson a job as a caretaker on his ranch. Richardson has lived there since, remarried to Teresa Rivers, and he is now retired. Finally, poor guy. You're wondering, has he gotten that money yet?
I have been wondering.
Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
In 2014, Florida Governor Rick Scott signed into law House Bill 227, which provides compensation to the wrongfully incarcerated person who was convicted and sentenced prior to December 31st, 1979. The law is so narrowly circumscribed that it is likely that Richardson will...
Circumcised?
Circumscribed! I said it correct! I hate you. The law is so narrowly circumscribed that it is likely that Richardson will be the only individual eligible for compensation under it.
Wow.
He's expected to be awarded $1.2 million.
Awesome.
But guess what? As of 2015, he still had not received any money. I've looked everywhere to see if he's ever gotten any of this. He is still alive, and I don't see anywhere that he's gotten this. And I just hope that that's a good thing, that that just means he got money and he's good as can be, right?
Yeah, but if he did get the money, there'd be records of such.
You'd think. So that is my story.
Wow.
Is that that's something?
That's so sad. That's so sad, and all mostly because of his skin color.
Yep, that's exactly right. You know, that just... That's a doozy, right?
Those cases bother me. So why did Bessie Reese murder the children and whatever happened to her?
So she murdered the children, I guess, word is. She was a little upset because one of her husbands, apparently she had many, left her for a cousin of the Richardsons.
Oh, so they...
She's not got all those kids then.
Oh, well, that makes perfect sense.
Doesn't it?
That's not crazy at all.
No. And sadly, she never stood trial for any of this. When she was up in her years, she was in a nursing home. She would repeatedly confess.
So she was losing her mind, basically.
Murdering all these children. And
right.
The nurse went and said, she's doing this and I know her. She's been here a while and she might be losing it, but this is not, she's fine. She knows what she's talking about.
Unreal.
You know, check out our website for more information on this. The photos of them at the funeral for all the babies was heartbreaking.
Oh,
I mean, it just heartbreaking.
Few things are sadder than little tiny coffins.
I agree.
Such an injustice. And that poor man.
And you should see him. He's like so
completely
ruined. Watching the interviews with him, he's like such a good person, you know?
Right.
And a lot of the people said that they were... And I was thinking about you and I and how we talk about this. A lot of the people in the town that thought he was guilty at first said because he wasn't very animated, he wasn't like upset and screaming. But also, I looked at it the other way. If you've lost everything your whole life, what is there? You give up. Like, I'm done. I'm not going to scream. All my 7 kids are gone. I'm going to go to jail for life. And I didn't do this.
Right.
Like, what, are you going to stand up and scream? I mean, maybe you might, but when you're a black man in the South in the late 60s,
no.
All what white jurors, white judge, white police officers.
There's no way you would raise your voice.
It's just so, you know, and he's just a down-to-earth guy. So
what a heartbreaking all around.
Terrible, right?
I hate
but when you think, if you
injustices like this. More
the babysitter finds the poison with the drunk. Right, come on. The day after that they'd already searched it twice.
First of all, if whoever served the kids food would be the ones.
Thank you.
You know, and me thinking my kids use all the utensils for everything, that they would probably be in the backyard with a spoon digging in this bag of chemicals.
Right.
And then not knowing it, and then they'd know they'd get in trouble for having the utensils outside, that they'd just go and slip it back in the drawer.
Right.
That's another thing that I would have thought of.
Yeah, but then that wouldn't knock out all 7 of them unless you used it for the...
unless you stirred.
Right, right. And they did find, I didn't include this in the story, but they did find the poison was actually in the pan. You know, that's why she didn't feed
her own kids. Now I get it. I wondered why you put that in on that day.
Foreshadowing.
That was foreshadowing. And I totally missed that.
You usually catch that.
I totally missed that shadowing.
You're losing it.
I am losing
it. Now we're
going
to call it back shadowing because you had to go back.
We're going
to
call it hindsight shadowing.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, tell the good people where they can get us, hit us up.
Well, I would love it if you would send me a tweet, or it's actually us tweet.
No, you'd send it to Jen. Apparently it's her show and it's her thing and it's her Facebook and it's her everything. It's her house. It's her everything.
Wow. That makes you look uglier.
Oh, thanks.
No. I run the Twitter account.
Here, I have some rice and beans. Would you like some? Bad joke.
Tweet at us. I run the tweet account and I love, or Twitter account, I guess. I'm sounding like an old woman. I do the Twitter.
I got to get on that there Facebook.
The Twitter account at Our True Crime Pod, and I love to talk to people and make new friends. Give us a shout out there or go to iTunes or any other app that you listen to our podcast.
On iTunes, give us 5 stars and tell us that you love us, and we'll send you a check.
Camille really needs that good positive feedback, so keep doing it.
I do. Makes it all worth it. Sitting in this basement with you.
If you DM me on Twitter, I'll tell you her backstory. Trust me, it's a doozy.
Remember, that goes both ways.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com.
All right, wrap it up, girl.
All right. Anyway, I think that's it.
All right. Remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love you. Arsenic.
And it was said that the house smelled strongly of parathon.
Parathon?
Of parathion. Treadwell charged...
Read that again. That didn't... Don't hurry. We've got plenty of time. I get to spend the whole weekend with him.
You're so cute. However, the police...
Just over... Okay, yeah, never mind.
Richard... I'm sorry. By injecting them with sosavaldicolamporine. I don't know how to say this. So I know how to say this because this is a common thing that people use. Susanephorine chloride. Susanephrol. You know what that is.
Succinylcholine. That's not an easy word to say.
Oh, we're still recording. I didn't even realize that. Sorry. Okay.